You are listening to the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, episode 260, using a Galaxy Note 7 as rocket fuel.
Season 6, episode 260 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is September the 17th, 2016. I'm Matthew Dean Furlough, and still traveling all over the world is my brother, James Furlough.
I'm actually home right now.
Yes, I recognize that, but it's like a Friday night for you, because aren't you traveling all weekend?
Yeah, I guess that's true. I am headed out tomorrow night. No, tomorrow day. Oh, man. I'm like, what is it? It's Saturday morning for you. It's Friday night for me. And I was out through Wednesday, and then I'm headed out all weekend. Church trip, though. It's not business trip.
Okay. So all right. Are they going to let you eat this time?
They should. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, I survived my fast, which is good. I survived the recovery of the fast, which is good. And I'm home just long enough to pick up.
Oh, man. That's
actually
right.
This is my old phone.
What? Why don't you have your new one?
Because on 9/16 at 7:30 a.m., due to operating conditions, your package may be delayed, / your delivery has been rescheduled for the next business day. So my phone will be delivered tomorrow.
That's awesome, because I was really worried that we were about to break a streak that has been consistent every year that we've done the show, whereby I get to see the iPhone before you do.
Yeah, I literally am like, are you kidding me?
This is the first time post the Friday of an app launch. I'm going to see the iPhone, just be one. So this is like, you were going to have the opportunity to see it. I was going to have to be like, oh, I won't see it till I get home. And because normally I go and check it out in the morning, then we do the podcast on Sunday. And
yeah,
I beat you to it. Now, I see I'm in London this morning, and I was thinking about going like Buckingham Palace and Big Ben and walking around, but I might just find the closest Apple store and check that out.
Yeah, I'm super disappointed. I was like, all right, I'm home all day, we're gonna make this work, and then it was like, oh, just kidding, not gonna happen. So thankfully though, you can now pre-sign for stuff with Apple. Like, they literally have a piece of paper that you print off and you sign your name saying I say it's okay to leave it at my front door.
So that's good.
Because my wife is out all day, too. So if you know where I live and you happen to hear this, which you won't because we're not airing this till Monday, you can get a free iPhone.
That's cool.
Yeah, I'm kind of just like, are you kidding me? But so I'm not going to get to see it till Monday.
Oh, man. Way after me. Don't even try,
it's just
James.
Sad.
The race is
it's
on.
Sad.
It's a race. I'm still in Lincoln today, as you can.
Yeah, you're leaving though soon, right? Like right after we finish the show.
It's in like, man, hours here. So it's like, it's terrible because I'm like, I'm so on the clock here right now. Last night I was hanging out with a couple of friends that I've made out here. And checking me all over Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and stuff. Just like hanging out. It's cool to be halfway around the world and be like, I feel like I have friends out here.
That's cool.
But it's amazing how much those different technologies that, like, you know, that whole making the world a smaller place, like just being able to stay in touch and quickly chat with people. And the other like crazy thing when you're here is just the ability to be like to coordinate with people where it for me, when I first started doing business travel, it was incredibly isolating. Like you were alone. And it's just crazy how that's just not the case nowadays. And it's only been a couple of years. Like, how is that? Like, I don't know. It's cool stuff out here, just from a tech perspective and getting to hang out with people. And
very cool.
But yeah, I was like, I was up till midnight, like I would normally be on a Friday morning or Friday night, and it's 5 a.m. here. Like, you, and it feels like a 5 a.m. normally does. And I'm about to go get on a plane and throw all that to the wind.
Yeah.
But should be fun. Yeah. But you know what, James? We're not here to talk about England and sleep schedules and iPhones. Oh, wait. No. Scratch that. The last one we are here to talk about. Because this week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and, of course, the technology they're developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw your way.
Yes, I founded and work for HPI, which bought a company we're going to talk about later on. However, I do not represent HPI or any of HP's opinions. I also own part of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club.
As far as I know, I'm still a partial owner of Skullcandy Incorporated. And yeah. That's my only disclosure, though. I'm going to be able to talk candidly about all these companies today. If you want to follow me throughout the week, seek pictures of Lincolnshire and stuff like that. Feel free to follow me on Instagram at nextwiggin4, N-E-X-T-W-I-G-G-I-N, or hit me up at MatthewDFurlow on Twitter. But cool. Don't
James Furlow at Twitter.com, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram.
Ooh, nice. And if you want to know more about the show or get the get the link to the podcast, if you want to, everything we talk about, any audio clips, which there will be some that'll be worth checking out, any article we talk about, all that stuff, it's at furloughbros.com. You can share that link with your friends. You just text it to them. Just be like, hey, check this out. Boom. And
yeah. And if you're on an iPhone and they're on an iPhone and you both are on iOS 10, it'll give a little preview of it.
Exactly. It's nice. It's really nice. It actually, it's like, it does it in every app now, which is kind of cool.
Right.
It's such a, we're super, like.
So innovative.
Yeah. Man, it's amazing to me that.
Oh, go ahead.
It's amazing to me that HTML survives as a unified standard. When you look at, like, text messaging and how that was a unified standard and it worked for everybody and it works across, like, all these different devices. And now it's just dead. Like, text messaging is going the way of dinosaurs. It's kind of amazing that HTML didn't run into that proprietary issue yet. Some might call the birth of apps that, but even then, I don't know. Interesting. Interesting thought. I'll have to think about it more. Anyways, I interrupted you. What were you saying?
Oh, it's okay. I was talking about innovation and disruption, and reminds me of what HPI did this week.
They innovated and disrupted?
Yeah, yeah. HP's going after the copier market. Ooh. And the way we do it, it's twofold. Number one, by Samsung's printing business. And then number two, release a whole bunch of new printers, like 16 new printers that are made for copiers.
So, okay. Incredible. Okay.
You're breaking up pretty bad.
Does that help?
I think so.
I need some clarification then, because this is my question. You just said that Samsung's printers business. Sorry. They're selling new printers. They announced new printers for. Are those copiers or are those printers for copiers?
You're going to have to say it again. You're still breaking up pretty bad.
This is okay.
Breathe.
I know. So, HPI launched a whole bunch of new printers. Now, when you say that, do you mean that they are selling printers for copiers or copiers? Are they printing? What are they?
Yeah, okay. You're going to work on your audio in the background while I answer this question. So they are selling, they are copiers, essentially. So, you know, like the photocopiers in the office or at Kinko's and things like that. Those are primarily, the idea is they are photocopiers. They've got like a bed on top of them. You make a copy of it and then print off a bunch of different versions of that same one. Over the years, those things have, yeah, they've developed Ethernet cables and stuff like that so they can connect to the network. And so you can print to them just like a normal printer. But the traditionally or fundamentally, like, they start out as copiers that happen to have a print function. HP's coming in, and one of the thought processes, well, it's a printer that happens to be the size and shape of a copier. So the idea is you can print a lot of pages really fast at a reasonable price, and you could obviously make copies as well. And not only are we setting it up so that you can do LaserJet printers that'll do that, but we also are doing our inkjet printers using what's called a page-wide array. You know, so normally you have the cartridge that zips back and forth really fast. James, don't have that anymore.
This isn't a...
What?
I said, James, this isn't a commercial.
I don't want to do a commercial, obviously. Just trying to explain how it works. And the real interesting part around it, I guess, is, so yeah, they're getting into the copier space, and it's a big space, and HP doesn't have any products there, and they're trying to survive. But the interesting part is the acquisition with Samsung. And here's why it's interesting. So on a LaserJet printers, HP doesn't make any of their own print engines. Canon makes all of them for us.
Okay.
Now, Samsung has their own print engine technology.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah, exactly. So the way that it currently works is whenever HP sells a toner cartridge, about half of the revenue goes back to Canon.
Interesting.
And with this, that's not necessarily going to be the case.
Oh,
so,
man.
It's not necessarily like going into the market and going to totally change things up, though obviously we think we have a better product, of course. But it's just we'll get to keep more of the revenue. And Canon is not very interested in this big copier market, whereas, well, we obviously are.
Yeah.
And so it's, we're going to play this tight rope of, well, we're still friends with Canon. They're still making all of our normal size printers for LaserJet. And now we've kind of doing our own thing over in the A3 big printer copier space.
So just so we're clear, the reason why they make all your stuff is that because they own the patents on it? Is it just a,
yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Exactly. So it's kind of an interesting situation where from a pure revenue standpoint, we actually make more money selling LaserJet printers and LaserJet's toner than we do with ink, but we own everything for ink. And so we actually keep a lot more.
I thought you just bought one of the world's most advanced photocopiers.
What do you mean?
The iPhone 7 with its cameras, where you just take a picture of stuff and then you send it digitally everywhere.
Oh yeah, one of those. Yeah, I did that too.
See, that's the part to me that if I'm allowed to be a little bit critical for a second, you know, isn't I was Fair under enough. The impression that print is dying. You know, it's funny.
Well, it is in a consumer space.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Business
we've talked
space,
about that before.
Not as much.
Yeah, we've talked about that before.
I don't know. In your job, do you print stuff off?
Yeah, but to my great annoyance, I print it off for other people because they still have a workflow that requires it. Being reduced more and more. I mean,
that's totally true. I agree with that.
Okay.
Yeah, all and right. There will come a day when we're living a Star Wars dream and there's no paper. I get it.
And all the Russian hackers will love it.
Yes, very true. But yeah, so we bought them. I think we got it for a song and a dance, buying them for $1.05 billion. That's gonna be awesome. That's an awesome deal.
Is it? I wonder why they're getting rid of it. Maybe it's to pay for their other scandals.
yeah, right. Yeah, they gotta buy a bunch of phones back. They gotta come up with the cash for it. which we'll talk more about that later too. I think it's like you said, the people are printing less, and so this is just part of that consolidation process.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny that you had mentioned that. I mean, given the fact of what Samsung is, where its chip business is one of the biggest in the world, its cell phone business is arguably the biggest in the world. And they make everything else under the sun. If this is a shrinking department, it's a perfect time to offload it. Especially since they're not the dominant player in the market in this particular.
Yeah, they're like fifth or something.
Yeah. So if their position is, look, our printer division, our copier division isn't worth much on its own because it doesn't really, we don't sell very many printers. But you've got a patent portfolio that a company like HP is into, then yeah, sure, go for it. I like it. Interesting.
Yeah. So it's a good deal. I hope. We'll see. It's like the first acquisition that HP has ever done that will actually have a direct influence on my job, which is interesting.
That's kind of cool.
Interesting. Yeah, I do love that they're pitching it as the largest acquisition in HP's history. Like, really? We've been around for, 9 months?
Yeah. It's funny. I was wondering how that would work. Did you know that Bayer, so this is completely unrelated and I'm not worth talking much more about, but Bayer is buying Montesaro for $57 billion.
You mean Monsanto?
That's what I meant. What did I say? Montesaro? I think that's I think that's a school system in California. Yeah,
Bayer, like the people who make the pills that make you feel better.
Yeah, exactly. Heroin and whatnot. But yeah, that's
$57 billion.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. Cash. it's an enormous acquisition. Yeah, it's 57 Samsung printer divisions. It's crazy.
That seriously is. That's a lot.
Yeah, but you want to know who can tell you more about that, James?
No, I mean yes.
Okay. So Google's new natural neural net algorithm can tell you more about that. It can tell you more about anything.
Really?
This is really cool. So you want to pull this up to play the audio. It's worth it.
Okay.
So basically what they did was, we've talked about this before, that the easiest way to think about what a neural network is it's sort of a way of finding patterns in information, where you have a bunch of inputs that you input information into, and then it acts kind of like neurons in a brain, where it creates stronger and weaker connections based on these different mathematic models that it has going on, and depending on how you set it up, you get an output. And it could be used for all sorts of things where like the inputs could be if you're doing like handwriting recognition, you have a grid where a person can like write on that grid, then the input would be pixels on the screen and those pixels would go into the neural network. And then the output would be a letter from the alphabet and it would do that transformation. It's very quick. It's very effective. And you can do all sorts of different stuff. But one of the kind of cool parts is you can usually run neural networks backwards as well, depending on how you set them up. Where you can let's say you write a T and it will show you what a T looks like. It'll print out that is a T. But you can also kind of see where the weights go and you can have it come out and say, this is what a T looks like. This is what the average T kind of is done. So if you've got a handwriting algorithm with 1,000 different people who are inputting different letters and writing letters and stuff, and you're using a whole bunch of data from different people, you'll get these very you'll get this very generic T. But if you have one person train that neural network, it will basically be able to recreate that person's handwriting, which is kind of a – so Google is using a similar system as that, WaveNet, and they're breaking down sound into its phonetic pronunciations, and they're basically running – they're tuning a neural network by having somebody talk and having it identify the phonetic sounds – and then running it backwards. And what that's allowed them to do is to recreate sounds from text to speech in a very natural sounding way. And I think if we play the first audio file, you'll get a,
let me switch my stuff. All right. Hopefully this will work. Here we go.
The Blue Lagoon is a 1980 American romance and adventure film directed by Randall Kleiser.
Yeah, that wasn't a person.
Wow. Sounds like a person.
Yeah, I know. Well, and the advantage of it
that's
is that
pretty impressive. See, there's this other one that talks about babbling.
I just ate.
Yeah, I did.
That was this. There's lots of words for cadence of your tongue and but the name, because that's your favorite.
That's weird.
Yeah.
And then, let's see here. You can train it with music, huh? Let's see what that sounds like.
Yeah. So they trained it with Chopin. Sure. And, oh man, that goes really bad.
Yeah, I'll switch it back.
Thanks. So, yeah, so the idea here is that when the, like, their goal is to do really natural text-to-speech stuff, and that one where it was babbling, basically what they did was they didn't give it any input. They didn't have any text. That's what it came up with. So it just makes phonetic sounds in kind of a babbly way. And then they also did that where they trained it with Chopin, and then they didn't give it any music and just had it come up and basically babble music. And that's what it sounds like. So it's kind of a way of getting, what does it sound like without meaning and whatnot. But yeah, I think this is a really cool idea because this is their method of trying to, get to having a lot better voice speaking on Android and in different systems. And that kind of weird Siri-esque robotic voice is going to be a thing of the past relatively soon.
Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, essentially it makes it so you can just program it and walk away.
Right.
And it will just learn and keep going. Wow. That's fascinating.
Right. And especially,
scary.
I mean, like, yeah, and especially if you like you're concerned about losing your voice or something, this is a way for I think of Roger Ebert. He's the one that who survived, right? Who's still alive, but he had throat cancer, and they built a voice box for him effectively where he can type into it and it will use words that he's said to like recreate his speech, but it sounds very robotic. It sounds like a computer putting together audio clips. Whereas this, like, they could take all that source data and turn it into something much more natural sounding, to the point where you might even not recognize it. And then the other idea is because it requires a phonetic input, you could make it so all of a sudden I can speak Chinese because it just knows how I sound. If you put in the phonetics for Mandarin, then I would be speaking in Mandarin. So, you know, now think about that in the context of you want to translate a movie, but have the actor, do quote unquote the voice acting. And it's not exactly that simple to you know, if comedy is involved at all or whatever, and specifics of acting, but you can definitely see the trend where this is going, where this idea of you can take the input as something that just is what we do normally, train the algorithm to understand that, and then reverse the process to have it go backwards in time and, yeah, output something new that sounds very natural. And that's cool. Huh. I thought it was really neat.
Yeah, I agree. That's crazy. Wow. Those guys are smart.
I know.
Oh, man. Crazy.
So, yeah. So, speaking of guys who are really smart, this is blowing my mind, man. This is like, I could not have predicted this year, that Apple would come out with an iPhone and it would just be one of the biggest hits in the world, because the flagship phone for the largest mobile phone company in the world and Apple's primary competitor in that market is having a full-on official recall.
Yeah.
Of the flagship phone.
Wow. Samsung.
I know. I feel kind of bad. I don't feel bad. I've always felt like their mobile division is kind of slimy. Whereas like their chip division,
you're so biased. I know.
Well, it's like their chip division is we've worked with them, we've done stuff for them, and they're an impressive operation, and they do a huge amount of business. But I don't know, for whatever reason, I just feel like I don't feel bad for in this. I feel bad for their customers. But yeah, so if you haven't been following this story, basically what happened was Samsung released the Galaxy Note 7 a couple months early from their normal refresh cycle. And they did that specifically because they wanted to get out in front of the iPhone 7 launch. Normally they launch afterwards and Apple gets space to talk about their new technology for a while, and Samsung wanted to beat them to the punch.
Yep.
And so they did that, and accounts, it was a pretty great phone. It was large, great display, long battery life.
Yeah, really powerful, they were getting processor. Great reviews.
Yeah. And especially as an Android phone, it was a classic flagship phone. It was a first in class. Didn't necessarily have any really cool creative, like, wow, I've never heard of this innovation before. But just everything about it was solid. Good camera, whatever. And one of their biggest innovations was their whole quick charge thing, where they could charge the phone in 30 seconds flat or whatever. Not 30 seconds, but like 30 minutes. And with a battery with as much capacity as that phone, that was really critical, because if it charged as fast as an iPhone, it'd take days to charge it. I mean, it's just huge. It's a huge battery. And to keep up, they needed to innovate new technologies. Well, it turns out that it may not have been as well tested as it should have been. And occasionally, only about 24 in a million, which isn't that many unless you're one of the 24, the batteries explode.
Yeah. Oops. I've seen some of the pictures too. Like, it's not like, ooh, it just got really hot. Like, it's full on fire. Call the fire department.
Right. So lithium ion batteries are incredibly energetic, and when they get introduced to oxygen, they really let off a tremendous amount of chemical energy very quickly. And effectively, what they think, they don't know the root cause. They don't know exactly what the cause of it is yet. They're guessing it has to do with the quick charge stuff, just because that tends to break down batteries, and it's you're pumping a lot of energy into these chemicals really, really quickly. So it's not, wouldn't be a surprise if that's the culprit. But effectively, something's breaking down the safety barriers in the batteries. And once they let loose like crazy. And so there's a couple of things going on. Number one, Samsung realized what was going on, and they decided to announce a voluntary recall of the devices. They basically told everybody, hey, we recognize that there's a problem here, and you are free to come in, and we'll cut you deals. We'll put a new phone in your pocket and stuff, yeah. And we'll make it right. The problem with it was that the replacement Samsung phones, the replacement Note 7s that wouldn't explode in your pocket weren't available yet. So you had to trade it in for a different phone, or you had to go phoneless, or there was all sorts of weird like caveats to it. And at the same time, Samsung didn't need to stop selling the Note 7, even though they were telling you to recall it, because it was a voluntary recall and no government administrations were involved in this process. So they continued to sell the phone and all the carriers. But they, as they were simultaneously recalling it and saying, hey, don't use this. Well, it turns out the U.S. government thought that, hey, that's kind of uncool. So they started to make noises and stuff in different administrations at different times as it became appropriate, decided to get involved. Like the FAA had announced that you really shouldn't be bringing your Samsung Galaxy Note 7s onto airplanes. And if you do, they definitely shouldn't be charged or on. And
yeah, that's right. I was on an airplane and they made that announcement.
Yeah, really? I wonder if they'll make that announcement today on my plane.
I would not be surprised. Yeah, they were literally like, if you have a Samsung phone, turn it off and do not turn it on during the flight.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, it's a huge fire. It's really, it's terrible. So they also found that
the plane is not good.
Yeah, and they also found that because there was no requirement, it seemed, to for them to stop selling the phone or really an equivalent replacement phone, that people weren't returning them. They had a super low number of people coming in. It was like hundreds of thousands as opposed to the millions and millions and millions and millions they had already sold. And so there was this growing problem. That's when earlier this week, Samsung decided to kind of go even further because they realized that, hey, this is becoming a bigger problem. People aren't returning the phone and they're just holding on to these dangerous phones. So they sent out a software patch that would fix the problem by limiting the battery to 60% charges.
All right. Well, you know, that's something.
Your phone, the day with your phone basically dead. Yeah, exactly. It's and I get where they're coming from, where it's like a safety thing of like, look, we don't want these things to explode. So people are just avoiding the software updates, of course. You know, it's one of those. Yeah, it's one of those classic. It's such a small percentage. It's not going to happen to me. You know, if you were to pitch it as one, you know, two in every 1,000 phones catch fire, is that right? Or one in a million? I guess it's. Is it? Is that right? One in 1,000? That's right, right?
I don't know. What's the?
It's 24 out of every million.
24 out of every million.
It'd be two out of every. AMC, it'd be two out of every 10,000. It feels like a small number. It feels like your odds are unlikely, which they are. Except the fact they sell millions and millions of these phones. I don't know. It's tough. If I were in that position, I probably wouldn't have a phone either. And there have been, even though it's not the official stance of any of the carriers, there have been stories that if you go into this store and tell them, hey, I heard there was a recall, I want to get a new phone, the response has been, well, you can't get the phone that you want. So wait a bit. And once, hopefully when the new phones come in. And so like employees at the carriers have been encouraging people to hang on and just keep using your phone. And
perfect. Yeah.
Exactly.
What a mess. But I get it too, right? It's like they weren't planning on it. It's not like they have a bunch of phones just hanging out in the wings.
Yeah, that are fixed. Because the whole problem is it's like,
yeah.
I really wonder what the fix is, because it's like, did they do a root cause and realize that it was a particular process in the manufacturing of the battery, or are they just, or did they just limit how fast it could charge or something, and that, and now it's going to be like, I don't know. The other thing is, so the replacement phones, how you differentiate them, the ones that are grenades and the ones that aren't. The ones that aren't
grenades. that's awesome.
They have a red S marked on the box, but they don't have any physical characteristic differences on the phone once you take them out of the box. Which everybody's like,
saying the ones that were fine would have a green battery indicator or something like that.
Did they? That must have changed since early in the week. It's possible I missed something.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought I heard. They're like, the bad ones are white, the good ones are green.
Because I was reading on a
forum. Soon to do the software update.
Exactly. Well, I was reading on a forum because they were talking about how, like, it's a software thing. I was reading on a forum because they were talking about how, like, you know, so basically if I'm buying a phone, how will I know if it's a safe, you know, if I'm buying a used version of this in 2 years, how will I know if it's a safe phone or not? And
yeah, fair question.
Yeah. And Samsung's basically like, don't worry about it. Everybody's going to return their phone. It'll be fine. Oh, so the United States government finally has gotten involved in a big way, and it is now an official government regulated recall of the Galaxy Note 7s.
Sounds like that's a good thing.
Yeah, you know, Samsung's trying to save face and save money as much as possible, because like this is the big one, man. This is their opportunity. Like, you could just see the marketing campaigns for it, where they're, you know, they're like, everything that a Samsung can do, this feature, it's got quick charging, it's got a big screen, it's got so many pixels, it's got this cool thing, it's got this cool thing, and it's got a headphone jack, you know. But now, no, instead of, and what's funny is, oh, and the other thing that kind of kicked off this week early on was that Samsung finally decided that they couldn't advertise. They've pulled all of their commercials for the Note 7. So they're full on not advertising it either. I mean, this is just like a major stop. I did see, I think it's HTC had a commercial going called Skip the Sevens, where they were like, basically, don't buy a Galaxy Note 7 or an iPhone 7. Get a real phone with all of its features that won't explode. Yeah, this has
seems
just been
reasonable.
This has just been a nutty little bout for Samsung. I don't know, but
it's tough.
It is tough.
You feel for them to some degree.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I thought this was interesting was an article that I thought was actually really good. Competing with the iPhone specs is harder than it seems. And this is something that we've talked about over the years, and it was very apropos of this entire conversation. And it starts off with, it's a common fallacy, convenient to Apple, to think the iPhone maker doesn't care about specs, that they're too busy sticking cigarette stubs in other people's or into people's ears. The iPhone is behind the Android curve on almost every spec, and yet it remains the world's best-selling smartphone year after year. It's not because specs don't matter, but because the same specs mean different things on iOS and the Android ecosystem. And basically, it just gets into all of the reasons why vertical integration and a closed ecosystem have their advantages. And, you know, that opening sentence or that opening paragraph sums it up perfectly, that because Apple builds the hardware and they control it all, they're able to do more with less RAM. They're able to do more with a smaller screen. And Apple is very big on the whole good enough is good enough, where almost every flagship phone, Android phone from other companies have not just a better screen, but oftentimes like an order of magnitude better screen, like their screens are ridiculous compared to the iPhones. But Apple's really big into the whole, look, the Retina display is good enough for this particular use case. So we're not gonna pump the pixels. We want more, you know, just because it has a better number. We're just gonna say, no, our screen is good enough. And we don't need as much RAM because we can do more in stopping background tasks and taking advantage of our swap and everything. And there are things that Apple does to really maximize lesser specs. So when they do have like the A10 come along, which is a pretty amazing chip by anybody's standards, they really fly. And the only option that companies like Samsung has is to get really innovative. And one of the things I like about this article is it's not just sucking up to Apple the whole time. They're basically saying, look, these Android companies are doing incredible engineering and really building some amazing stuff, but it's really just to keep up with the iPhone, where the iPhone is able to kind of have lesser specs and perform, have as amazing performance. These other companies have to race out far ahead. And one of the problems they run into is they've got these giant screens with tons of pixels, and they require a lot of, they've got tons of RAM so that they can run really fast, and that requires a ton of power. And they've got all of these features that the only way to really make them work is to consume a lot more power. And so the only way to have an all day battery that consumes that much power is to have a giant battery. And as I stated at the beginning of this, that's eventually where it seems like Samsung's really gotten into their problem of they've got a huge battery because they draw a lot of power and they can't spend a lot of time charging it. So they've done some really innovative, cool things quickly to come up with their fast charging ability on their phones. And the end result of that seems to be a degradation of the battery itself to the point where it's you know, dangerous. So I don't know. It's one of those things where this isn't just Samsung really let their quality control down this time. This is totally a fluke. Now this is a symptom of a flashy symptom, but it's a symptom that all of the companies are dealing with, and it's part of the reason why Apple is still as dominant of a company as they are. And you know, it's just interesting. It's an interesting whole story to me.
Yeah. I mean they do have their Intenegate and Bendgate and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's not like Apple's without their things, but you know, the last two Samsung Galaxy Note phones, the last one, if you put the pencil, like the cool stylus that was this giant selling feature, if you put it in backwards once, you permanently destroyed some of the features. I mean, ooh. Yeah, Samsung's not... And there was nothing to stop you from putting it in backwards. Like, it's just... It's one of those things where, yeah, no company's perfect, but... You know, Samsung's struggling because they need to move so fast to keep everything perfect.
I understand. Okay. All right. I want to switch gears here to TechCrunch Disrupt, which took place last week. Cool. I just want to share the winner and the follow-up, the runner-up. So the winner is a company called Mobalytics, and it is a coach for competitive gamers. So essentially, they started out with League of Legends. It can analyze your gameplay, tell you your style, how you do it, and what you can do to improve to make you more competitive.
Nice.
Yeah, and their goal is to then move into other games, obviously. and to just help people take their games to the next level. So,
it is amazing how big of an industry that's becoming.
I know, right? It's a thing. Yeah, they have their Gamer Performance Index, your GPI, and yeah, it kind of tells you where you're at. Yeah, gaming's a thing for sure, and. Sure. As VR and AR and all those start to take off, it'll continue to be a pretty big deal. The other one, the follow-up or the runner-up, sorry, I actually think is a little more interesting, but they didn't win, so whatever, they're losers. Unify ID is the name of the company, and their whole goal is to get rid of the password.
All right.
So,
the dream.
So it's kind of an interesting idea. Where what you do is you install a piece of software. It's like a, they have like right now, it's a Chrome extension, browser extension, and you, they have an iOS mobile app with an Android app coming soon. And essentially what it does is it tracks you. And so it just learns about you and the way you work. It learns about... the places you go, the devices you use, the sensors you interact with throughout the day, even to the point where they check your walk and your cadence as you're typing. And what happens is they start to build a profile based on you. And then when you go to a website, they calculate the likelihood that it's actually you who's visiting that website. Now, if they're really certain... you just sign right in. If they're not so certain, then they'll ask you for a password. And even then it might be something like, they'll ask you to, they'll send you what I would call it, like a challenge type of thing. Like they'll ask you to use your Touch ID on your phone in order to log in and prove you are who you are. And then eventually, which like when you first sign into something and we first start using it, that's they're gonna challenge you, but eventually the idea is they'll know you so well that they'll just know it's you when you log in.
It's a really intriguing idea, because in security there's three forms of authentication. There's who you are, there's what you have, and there's what you know. So who you are biometrics, like your thumbprint, your retina scan, your DNA. So that's one way to authenticate a person. Then there's, but those can be faked, whether it's by making a fake thumbprint, you know, having a fake eye scan, or just faking DNA, whatever. There's what you know, which is like a password. I'm, you know, the passwords that I have in my head, or information about my life that only I would know. And, you know, right. Those are all, that's the idea. That's the classic idea of the password. And then have, which is the two-factor authentication. I've got a cell phone, and if I have a cell phone, then that device can be used to, you know, if I log into something and they go, we're going to text you a number, then you input and verify that you have that cell phone. Or in the case of credit cards and Apple Pay, you using your phone is an act of authenticating yourself with what you have, your phone. So
right.
These are all like, those are your different systems for security. So the idea of this, it seems like, is kind of combining those into like a general profile of a person, like a more generalized biometric, it sounds like.
Yeah.
That's just sort of aware of if it's you or not, because ultimately that's what we do, right? Like as people, like I know it's you, not because of anything in, you know, like there's not necessarily one particular thing I would lock down. It's a whole host of things. I know what you look like. I know what you sound like. I know the sort of things you talk about. Like if you were to come onto this show and start talking about, I don't know, ballerinas, I would be like, well, this is out of character for James. Are you okay? What's wrong?
Right.
Even if you sounded like you and looked like you. So it really requires all of these different components.
Turns out I'm a deep mind shadow of myself.
Google's recreating you.
Talk about ballerinas for some reason.
Yeah. Push the ballerina agenda. But yeah, that's a really interesting.
They're an underrepresented idea. Class, okay? That's not even funny. I almost went somewhere else. I'm not going to go there. Their lives matter.
Oh, man.
I know. I did it. Man. Yeah,
couldn't help yourself.
It's late, okay? I have no... My inhibitions are now getting lower.
It's late on a Friday night. I get tired. It. Yeah. Hey, totally. Man. It's all right.
Only I had the excuse of a drink.
This has been such a great week. It's weeks like this I wish we did a politics show. Most weeks, I'm glad we don't. Weeks like this, I wish we did. Because there's just so much ridiculousness going on. And actually, it's been the best part about it is people ask me about it here in England. And I get to give an uncontested opinion all the time. I just get to tell them this is what's happening as though it's facts, even though it's clearly at least partially my opinion. And
that's awesome.
I try to be fair about it, but it'd be dumb for me to think I wasn't naturally, leading people a little bit. But
yeah, it's kind of interesting talking to people who, for all intents and purposes, don't really care. They're just interested.
They're affected in a weird backwards sort of way by it. I don't know. It's really...
Yeah, kind of. Just like it's like how I feel about the Brexit. It's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some sort of impact on my life, but it's just interesting mostly.
I think it's a little more intense for them. It seems like they seem genuinely concerned about who we elect, but yeah, it's not... It's just the leader of the free world. Actually, this is kind of an interesting, I know we are completely off topic now, but just watching the technology in Lincolnshire change over the last 4 or 5 years has been freaking fascinating.
What do you mean?
Just like 4 or 5 years ago, nobody had an iPhone. Everybody had Android phones, and I see them all the time now. Just the number of people, when I first got here, nobody was using apps and stuff. And now they're all up on the city Snapchat. I'm like, ugh, I hate Snapchat. I don't hate Snapchat.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
you just hate the founder.
Exactly. It's like, I hate their CEO. The company's fine. But just the whole, they're using Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, and they're having similar questions as we are. That's the funniest part. Is they're like, what's the point of Twitter? Like, I don't even get it. Like, what do you do with Twitter? And then somebody will be like, well, it's
you
really
tweet. Seems exactly. Pretty straightforward.
They're like, well, it seems it's really great for when you're watching sporting events and having a live update and getting the news. Like when a celebrity dies, I know immediately because of Twitter. it's fascinating that the converse that those conversations have finally reached their way into, this sleepy little English town. Kind of bring this back around, the whole Unify ID thing, these problems that are sort of systemic that these smaller, that communities who are really into the tech bubble deal with, passwords, are starting to grow. And so if you can have something like this, it'd be a... The other part of the Unify ID thing is that it really knows you. And as we were talking about earlier with one of the cool parts of neural networks is that if you can create a neural network that can take inputs and correctly identify characteristics, identify the pattern of the person as an output, you could theoretically reverse that process and fake somebody.
Yeah, that's probably true. Of course.
Yeah. That seems like a bad idea.
But in theory, that happens with when people are hacking your passwords, right? So it's already happening.
This is a much more, This is a much more thorough, like, you more could
private.
Yeah.
Personal, maybe.
Right. Yeah. And in an automated fashion. That would be my concern, is what if Unify ID gets hacked? Not only do they, because that's the thing with your three-part authentication, right? What you know can change, what you have can change, but who you are can't change, which is in some ways, like, the thumbprint is was a great way to identify somebody, because they can't change that. But the other problem of it is that if that becomes public knowledge and can be replicated, you can't change that. It's now just a known quantity. And so if they come up with a complete who you are, a biometric identifier that is how you act, like, that exists now. And if that ever is let out into the world, like, you can't change that. It's who you are. I don't know. It feels weird. Does that feel weird at all? I don't know. Am I being overly
Yeah, probably.
Okay, fair enough. Oh. That's cool. Well, so what kind of car do you drive?
I own a Prius and a Jeep.
Do either one of them have automatic radar braking?
No, but I wish they did.
All right. So that is a requirement for this next story. But we were talking. You brought this story to us originally.
I did.
And what's the guy's name?
Okay.
I got you. I know. That's why I gave you credit for it. What's his name? Something Holt. I was completely off there. So George Hotz, he's a hacker who became famous for breaking the iPhone, jailbreaking the iPhone, and jailbreaking the PlayStation 3, and he kind of had this aimless life story where he'd hack something, get paid a bunch of money for showing how he hacked it, because he, you know, doing bounty programs, bug bounty programs and stuff, and just sort of never made a ton of money, always made enough money to just live, and then would just goof off in the interim until he was out of money, and then he'd find another bug. So, like, this super talented engineer who wasn't doing much. Well, it seems like he finally got intrigued by an idea and wanted to actually build it, and so what he did was he used a bunch of consumer-grade electronics and fixed them into his car and wrote a machine learning algorithm that would take input, like the camera input from it mounted to his car, different vitals that his car was talking about, and his, you know, like the acceleration data and stuff like that. And I guess also the radar for the automatic braking. And he would use all of that and feed it into a machine learning algorithm, and it would effectively watch him drive. So he would drive the car, and then train the algorithm to that. And after he was done driving, he could turn the algorithm on, and the algorithm would do the same thing, and it would drive him, which was pretty cool. And quite a few companies like Tesla were like, that's never going to work as a long-term solution. And he didn't have anything going for him. Well, it turns out he got an investment a couple of years back where somebody, I can't remember what the VC was, they were like, hey, we're going to give you some money. We're going to let you hire some guys, kind of flesh this idea out more. There might be something there. Well, this week they announced what that there is, or at least the first iteration of it. They are selling a $999 aftermarket kit that will allow buyers to give their cars semi-autonomous abilities on par with the Tesla's Autopilot. Basically, it'll use your smartphone mounted to your onto your windshield as its camera. It's going to get some computer horsepower plugged into it. You'll, like, jack into all of these different vitals that we're talking about. and everything that's required. It also requires power steering, so it can take over the power steering function. So there are requirements on what your car needs, but honestly, there's a lot of cars out there that have all of this technology. The company's name we've mentioned before is Comma.ai, and but yeah, it's $1,000 aftermarket, and then it will also require a $24 monthly subscription fee, which will give you access to the software as well as certain in-car features so the idea here has been, and this has been his plan all along, was the idea being that people who are going to drive, because right now they have a program where if you have like an Android phone or an Apple phone, you can sign up with Comma.ai and put your phone into your window and drive around. And they're collecting that data and training the AI on just people driving everywhere. So they've been doing that for a while. And the cool part about this is that as the algorithm gets trained and updated, then they can give constant software updates. Now, companies like Tesla, once you pay the quote-unquote installation fee where you unlock the software, you get those software updates for free. And Google doesn't have – all of your fully autonomous car companies out there aren't selling their software, so there's no word on what the subscription looks like. So this is really the first, like, look at this sort of like autonomous car style stuff and what it might cost. And $24 a month is it's a bit pricey, but it's less than most gym memberships. So it's not like it's crazy money.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you've got bought a brand new car that's got self-braking and power steering and all the rest that's required, and you have $1,000 for an aftermarket kit, you know, what kind of payments are you going to be making on that car? $200 a month? Throwing an extra $24. It's not crazy for the overall cost. But yeah, it allows you to just take over. And so, like you said, it's similar to Tesla's Autopilot, where it really excels in the whole, you're on the freeway, it will do lane tracking, self-braking, you know, navigating with the different, you know, speed changes and stuff and lane changes. It's not to the it drives everywhere for you and you can't take over its stage yet, but it's moving along quickly. And I'm really interested because he's taking such a different approach to the software aspect of it. I think it'll be fascinating to see how successful they are.
Yeah, that is interesting. Man, I hope it's successful.
Me too. I hope it's successful because it's going to be horrifying if it's not. He's really smart, though. You might have something up his sleeves. I don't know.
I think, like you said, I mean, the $24 a month thing is kind of hurts a little bit, but man, it is relatively cheap relative to other options.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I want in on it.
Yeah, me too.
So, not as forward-thinking, but forward-thinking nonetheless. Thursday Night Football streamed on Twitter.
Bum, bum, bum. Yeah, did you watch that way?
No, why not? I was busy doing something. Oh, I had
a life.
Apartment complex work and then had a meeting and I just missed it. That and it's the Bills and someone else. New York Jets.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. Who cares about them?
Exactly. But apparently, 2 million people watched.
That's quite a few people.
Yeah.
How many people normally watch Thursday Night Football?
So, 48 million watched on TV.
Okay. So they got a little ways to go.
A little bit. Yeah, on average, they had 243,000 people watching at any given time, whereas CBS and the NFL Network reached an average of 15.4 million on average people watching at any time. So, and those numbers, from what I understand, are like apples to apples compares. So, you know, they're like, yeah, like you said, they got ways to go.
But this was literally the first time. I mean,
yeah. And the feedback I got from, or the feedback, or how do I want to say it? Like the stuff that I read, everyone was like, it's pretty cool. Works well. There's some concerns about the feed. Like, hopefully it doesn't get boring, but, yeah, overall people were super pumped about it. They're like, the stream was fine. It was up. It was live. It was like a 15 second delay, I think, over the television, which is reasonable.
Yeah.
And, everyone was like, just hoping the tweets were curated a little bit more, maybe going forward or something like that. But
how would they curate them a little bit more?
Dude, I don't know. I don't know. However they're doing it. I don't know.
I guess if they gave you the ability to curate it, so you could be like, I don't want to hear this person anymore.
Oh, maybe.
You know, you do.
I don't know, but success, future of streaming is happening. It'll be interesting to see if it builds. Like, again, you're kind of like two teams. You're like, do I really care? But I guess 48 million people care too much. So
that's that is nearly a seventh. One out of every seven Americans watched that game on Thursday night.
Isn't that crazy?
Football is enormous.
Jump the shark. I'm still calling it. But
I you know what? And it's
a big shark.
It's hard for me because it's hard for me because I'm like, that's how I feel it too. Like, I feel like, okay, something's peaked, but it might just be my disinterest. Like, I like to think I'm the leading edge of the wave on this, like on my disinterest in football, but I might just be too hip for the room and it's going to keep being a juggernaut for, that is so many people. Oh my gosh.
yeah. But anyways, there you go.
It's interesting.
Twitter, they're making it happen.
I'm excited on Twitter's behalf because I think Twitter's a cool company and I want them to figure it out. I want to keep doing what
they're doing. Yeah, I mean, that's the question. Will it actually lead to more people joining Twitter since you don't actually have to join Twitter to watch it?
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, if you're watching it on Twitter and you're seeing people make stupid comments and you have to join in order to correct them, make sure they know you're right, yeah, you'll jump on. I think it's a good idea. The public forum. It's going to get nasty. I love it. Yeah. I kind of want it. Honestly, I will say this. This is like this is the one part of the NFL this season that I'm actually kind of excited about and want to watch a game this way. Because I think it'd be fun. I don't know who I'd watch. I'd have to look at their schedule, but yeah. I'm very curious to see how the whole Twitter side of it works out.
If I'm free on a Thursday night, I'll turn it on. I'll watch part of the game. Why not?
I might go out of my way to make time for it is what I'm getting at.
The trick is to be free.
Oh, no.
Right. Understand.
So, in my continual march to make sure to talk about AR, VR every week, Tim Cook did me a favor, much to my irritation. So, obviously, I thought one of the big features of the dual-camera iPhones was going to be AR, augmented reality, because they can do depth map sensing when they have the two cameras. And I went so far as to be like, no, this is definitely happening, because they even in their keynote talked about how the bokeh effect uses a depth map, and yet nothing. No announcement of AR software whatsoever. It's just like, what the heck? I'm so befuddled by what's going on. Well, Tim Cook was asked about it, and his response was basically like, "Hey, VR is going to be cool. It's going to have some niche applications like video games, but Apple doesn't think VR is the next big thing. What they think the next big thing is, and what they think will be a much bigger market, is augmented reality. And which is effectively...
I think he's right.
Yeah.
Google Glass, that's essentially what that was, kind of.
Right.
Well, and he's not about the implementation, but I totally agree.
Well, I think what's really interesting about it is his argument is, I think people are still going to want to interact with each other without having anything in their way. They want supplemental information where they want it. And so the argument I think he's making is actually for the idea of not having a headset. He's not saying Google Glass or HoloLens, which are both AR platforms. He's saying your iPhone is going to be your AR platform, where you can point it at stuff and get all sorts of supplemental information through that screen. But as soon as you put the iPhone away, that goes away and you're back to normal, what I like to call BR, or boring reality.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I just...
he's right, I think.
He is right. I just want to know... Oh, gosh. I wish I could be a fly on the wall, because I'm just curious at this point. Like, if I had this story, I'd break it. I'd explain everything I could on this show and try to make us as much money as possible, which is why they'll never let me be a fly on the wall. But there's a part of me that just wants to be a fly on the wall, just so I can understand, like, what is going on behind the scenes. Why would you put the hardware in place and not do anything on the software front? Like, why not? Or maybe their argument is that they are doing something on the software front. They're just not calling it AR, even though that's exactly what it is, because for whatever branding reason, they don't think that that's a winning brand.
Yeah, I don't know. We've seen it before, though, where they start with a piece of hardware and then they open it up and start to use it a little bit more. Yeah, he's just so bad at that kind of like, I'm telling you, but not telling you stuff.
Yeah.
That's what I hate. He's just like, oh yeah, we're looking at it. Whereas that's the fun part about Jobs was he would tell you his philosophy.
Right.
And then from there, you'd try to be like, okay, how does that translate into a product or service?
Right.
And he'd let your imagination just kind of wander. And I feel like Zuckerberg gets that that's what he should be doing. He's not nearly as good at it.
Yeah.
Elon Musk definitely gets it and does that.
Yeah.
And then he goes, here's my philosophy and here's how we're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He doesn't leave anything to the imagination. He just states
just
it.
Happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he gives you the philosophy as well, which is nice. And he's kind of got that. Yeah. And I feel like Bezos just does it.
Right. Yeah. Doesn't talk about it.
No. Yeah. He's amazingly good at just doing his own thing. Leave me alone. I'm busy, which is amazing. I don't know. But Cook is just, I don't know. He's an operations guy. He doesn't have that vision piece, which is what has always been the.
It's funny. I'm not even sure he doesn't have the vision piece, because I think he's at least got it to a degree. I'll bet if you could have a conversation with him just talking about vision type stuff and philosophy, you'd find that he really has a deep understanding, at least an understanding, if not a...
Of course he has an understanding.
But it's the ability to communicate it that he doesn't have. And, you know, and that's... we're comparing him to Steve Jobs. It's incredibly unfair.
Well,
but I think you know what
the issue is.
Yeah,
he has a technical. I feel like he has. I don't want to say it. He's like a guy who's speaking a second language. Where he's got the grasp of it. He gets it. He can give you answers in that language, but it's not like a native speaker,
right?
Who is going to just fly off the cuff and just say stuff. They don't have to think about it. It's like he has to think about it.
Right.
And it's like a fifth year Spanish speaker. Where you're like, you're good.
You know what he reminds me of, James? He reminds me of a politician and kind of the weird way that they talk, where everything is very guarded. Well, and the thing is, And the thing is that it's like, I think he does have his personal beliefs and vision, and they're probably really smart and clever and wise. And he's got this, and he's got people that work for him that have incredible vision and movement and stuff that he really grasps and understands. But yeah, he turns around and, yeah, I guess the way that you said it is best is that he doesn't give you anything concrete to latch onto. He just kind of talks in platitudes of, oh yeah, we think AR is going to be a huge deal, and we're really excited about it.
I mean, that's what he did with the whole wearables thing. I think wearables is an interesting space. And we're like, okay, clearly you're coming out with a watch of some sort. Duh. We just don't know anything about it. And then he came out with a watch of some sort. And you're like, they're going to do something AR too. Is it going to be a headset? I don't know. Is it going to be the phone? I don't know. Clearly he thinks it's important. And maybe, I don't know, maybe your comment that maybe he's just bad at communicating, it's also semi-true. And it just drives people nuts because they're like, no, there is a philosophy here. It's just not.
Yeah. Well, it's clear. I you know what the other problem about it is that some of the fun of Apple had been the mystery and the surprise. Whereas I think, especially for us nowadays, it's like saying, yeah, we think AR is a big deal. We're like, well, of course you do. Because we look at the hardware, we look at the acquisitions, we look at all these different components, and we've already come to the conclusion. You've spent tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, building up a suite of artificial or augmented reality software and hardware. We know that. You don't make $100 million investments unless you think it's important and there's a potential there. So give me something more. Get me excited. Don't just tell me, oh, yeah, that thing you already know. That's true. Like, yeah, I know. I think that's the other problem. You know, whereas when Elon Musk says something like that, you actually feel like you're getting something new. Even if it's just a small piece of the puzzle, it's something new. And not his fault, but I guess.
A little bit.
It's, yeah.
Kind of all it is.
Yeah. Now that you mention it, I suppose you're right. I don't know. Cool. I'm excited. I'm glad to hear they're doing something, and I'm glad to hear it acknowledged publicly, what we already knew to be absolutely true.
Yeah. Real quick, I got some like three articles I just want to like share. The first one is Apple Killed the Cyberpunk Dream. It's the name of this title. It's pretty funny. Essentially, Slate goes into the things where it's like they're ruining the movies like The Matrix. They're like, there's something about being jacked in and using cords, and there's like, and Apple's getting rid of all of that, so thanks for nothing. Like, it's crazy to think like in like 5 years the Matrix will seem quaint if it doesn't already.
Will seem really dated. I don't know, have you ever watched it? Like, have you watched it recently?
Yeah, I've watched it. Not recently.
Yeah, it's like, honestly, the whole I got to get out of the Matrix, so I'm going to go to a payphone. A payphone. You know, the only reason the movie works is because the whole premise of it is that it's like they're in a weird dystopian future where everything's regressed but super advanced. And specifically, it's a period piece. Like, it is set, for whatever reason, the robot decided in 1999. Which at the time felt very relevant today, but they stated outright, it's 1999. This is the period that turn of the century. Place in. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would be more of, Yeah, no, I agree.
See,
at least inside the Matrix, it's kind of outside in Zion.
Yeah.
Well, how some of those things work, but.
Right. Well, and it's like movies or books like, the Foundation series, which is sort of like your super classic science fiction, is like so much of that movie, like they're reading stuff off of rolls of paper. And there were all these like cool advanced, like printer type things that the book talks about. And you're like, it's so weird that nobody uses screens in this book, because like, and for him, like printer technology, that could just, you could send a message and it would print out the message, like, a was advanced, like that was futuristic when he was writing it.
Yeah.
It's part of the reason why the original Star Trek is so incredibly impressive, is because it has held up for so long in its futuristic feeling without feeling goofy or pointless. But that, it's really hard to write science fiction like that, where you actually nail that sort of stuff, and it doesn't feel super outdated and weird, and require an even bigger dose of disbelief to enjoy it.
No, that makes sense. The other thing is, Walmart has submitted a patent for self-driving shopping carts.
That's awesome. I love that.
It is kind of awesome. There are, like, this article on Discover Magazine, like, we don't know what they have planned with it, but imagine the possibilities of, A, you're looking for something and you're like, I don't know where it is in the store. Type it into an app or whatever it is connected to the cart, and then just follow the cart to that thing.
That'd be awesome. You could just tell the cart, hey, cart, I need some Cheerios, and just follow the cart to the Cheerios.
Yeah.
Like a little friend.
It'll take you to it in the store. Yeah. Yeah. Instead of having to ask a human, the cart will take you. And then obviously it'll clean it. You get done with your cart in the parking lot and then just like tap, go back to the store.
Oh, nice.
and it just takes itself back like a Roomba.
Yeah.
And, wait until one of those things gets smashed. And it's that's actually what it looks like. It looks like a Roomba that attaches underneath the cart. So it can use existing carts, which is kind of nice. But, anyways, they're like, there's no word on when they're gonna come out with it. They just submitted the patent, but kind of awesome.
Yeah,
I like it. And then I thought this was interesting, actually. YouTube is trying to become more of a community type of platform.
Interesting.
So the issue with YouTube,
they're not
a bunch of videos.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
If you create a bunch of videos, it's hard to connect with your audience directly. Like, let's say you're doing music videos and you actually have a live gig. Like, how do you tell your fans where your gig is at?
Okay, that makes sense. You tweet about it.
You really would have to create a video. Yeah, you tweet about it. You do it on Facebook. You do it somewhere off YouTube. Like, because create a video just to say, come stream me live. They go, that's weird. Other than you tag it on at like the very end, perhaps, of another video. But then, like, it's temporary. So YouTube is working on actually allowing you to upload text posts, still photos, animated GIFs, and, you know, videos as well. So pretty soon they're going to turn it into a full on like content creator platform where you can just do YouTube and curate an entire community around it.
Look,
so
Google, you ruin everything with Google Plus. Don't ruin YouTube with making it into Google Plus too.
Well, it sounds like they're going to try to not do that, but
good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. Google Plus had its struggles for different reasons, but if they already have a community, just adding new features to make it a full-fledged platform isn't necessarily a,
well, they specifically worked with like the top 40 creators, YouTube creators. And, and said, all right, what features are important to you? What would actually work? And then they also opened it up to real fans and got feedback from them. And because when they, like, an example was when they first got started, it was actually called Backstage. Because the idea was you get behind the scenes stuff about what's going on.
Yeah.
But as they started talking to creators, they kept talking about how it would allow them to foster a community and build a community. And so they ultimately were like, well, maybe we should call this YouTube Community. And so things like that, where they've been trying to, try to make it user-friendly. Do some market research, you know?
Nice. It's good. I like it when they do that.
Yeah. So there'll be a lot more later. But I think it's good if you do videos and stuff.
Hey, to know we do videos.
It could be a standalone. Oh, so we do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll let you know when we're doing a live gig.
Still, furtherbros.com, just go there. We already got the community and the platform.
Exactly.
We bring all the videos over to that.
Exactly.
Dude, they just recently they did a new thing where it defaults to where you cannot embed the video. I have to now manually check that box each time.
That's annoying.
It used to be the opposite. It's their way of trying to keep you on. It's weird. It's almost like embedding helped them go like wildfire, and now they want to discourage embedding.
Right. Well,
now that they're big enough.
Or say, is it weird, James, or does it completely make sense?
I know it does. It's like they flipped that switch like a month ago.
Yeah, that is frustrating.
Super annoying.
But
anyways.
Too bad. Cool. So I like this stuff. As you know, I'm kind of into the whole semiconductor industry stuff. It's where I really? Work. It's what I do. It's the reason I'm in England. And there's competition. There's drama heating up in the silicon space. So it's official. I think I'm going to mention this, but they've actually taken the iPhones apart. They've verified this. This is true. The iPhone 7 modems, they're LTE GPS modems, the things that actually do the communicating with the internet. Their cellular component, as it were. They've been Qualcomm chips forever, pretty much the entire time the iPhone has existed. Qualcomm has sourced almost entirely the those chips. Well, Apple is going with a different vendor for at least a portion of the phones in that they are sourcing some of them from Intel. Intel, their modems won't work on every network, like Sprint is one of them that it doesn't work on. So if you're on Sprint, you have a Qualcomm chip. But if you're not on one of those specified networks, you might have either a Qualcomm or an Intel chip. But this is huge because we've been talking about this. Intel obviously was giant in the laptop PC era, and in that market they're still the dominant player. And then mobile came along and they completely missed the boat in both CPUs and wireless technology. Just got completely sideswiped by it. They've been coming around for your super embedded stuff like systems on a chip. They've been really aggressively trying to get into that market. But this is a pretty big deal that Intel is – it's a wireless that an actual mobile modem is coming out of Intel into a major product. And I would guess that for Apple, they've got a couple reasons to do this. Number one, it gives them negotiating power over Qualcomm because – if Qualcomm's the only person that can source chips for them, then they have to play very nice with Qualcomm. If they can go to somebody else, then they can use the two companies to leverage. That's a Tim Cook special right there. That's where he is amazing at that sort of thing. And really using their position and multiple sources in order to leverage better prices and better performance and better service. So that's huge for Apple. But I think the other big part here is that it's obvious to me and a lot of people in the industry that Apple wants to use Intel as a fabless manufacturer. So Apple will design the chips and Intel will build them for them. And this is the first, like, this is they're starting to expand that market. Obviously, they already have a relationship with Intel for the MacBooks and the Macs.
Totally.
But you know, they're expanding that market. And this is great for Intel because they're not completely shut out of the modern market, which is good for a company that doesn't want to die.
Yeah, generally.
So it's a cool change, you know. Get one little I know. Now it's Intel inside, James. It's awesome.
Sweet. All right, I got one for you. It's gonna cost you a dollar. I'm so torn on whether or not to buy this or not.
It's
called Grammar Snob.
Yeah.
It's a sticker pack for iMessages. Okay.
Yeah.
But all of the stickers look like grammar fixes. So it's like a red pen that, like, if you say like instead if you do your instead of your. you know, like one of them, you should have had the apostrophe or not. Like you can literally put up a sticker that crosses it out and has, again, in like red pen underneath it, "you're" spelled correctly.
That's really funny.
We got it for like lose and loose and losing, me, myself, I, less, fewer, it's. That's a classic. 222 was where we're. Espresso. couldn't care less. and then like all the different like squiggly lines, a line through, X's, a question mark, apostrophe S. Just a whole bunch of grammar fixes. I love the internet.
Yeah, that is really funny. That is really funny.
One of the comments is, "This can make America great again." Oh, it's just so funny.
My only problem with it is, in the age of dictation where people dictate all the time, it's kind of dangerous territory to correct grammar because you don't know if it's that person's fault and you don't want to be a jerk.
And honestly, that's my one, like, would they know that it's being funny?
Yeah.
Or you just offend somebody.
I think you either have to be a real, real annoying person, or you have to have a relationship with people where it's like, if you are friends with somebody who is also a bit of a grammar Nazi and you buy it and use that on them anytime they get anything wrong, that would be pretty funny. Like, that would just be, you know, if you're on the same level, I could see using that. But if somebody were to use that on me, it's like you're picking on a child. Come on now. It's just not fair.
Yeah, but so it's one of those where and that's the biggest reason why I'm not buying it, because I'm just like, I don't know when I would use it and it would be appropriate.
You see,
but love the concept of it, where you're like, oh, that's creative. No one was thinking of that for stickers, but it's so good.
Yeah. The only one on there that really sells, like I could see using, is the couldn't care less. But normally my response, I just go with the extreme sarcasm. I list all the things that they could care less about, or, you know, I could care less about that. Oh yeah. What else could you care less about? So you care a lot, or like, where on the spectrum of care are we? Cause it doesn't really narrow it down much for me.
Super funny.
Awesome.
Anyways, if you're on iOS 10 and you want to have some fun with it, it's a worthy dollar to spend. I'm really tempted for some of the Star Wars stickers too, but Disney wants to make me have the cools for $2.
Right? I haven't gotten any stickers yet. I feel like I should get into it. I've been like adorning every text I send with like a pound or a whisper or something. Just
yeah. It's kind of, I don't know how I feel about that stuff. The notifications, I think, needs to be worked on.
In iOS 10?
Yeah. Specifically for if you're changing the way the text message, because if you send like with a loud effect, the notification will say text message sent with a loud effect.
Yeah.
And you're like, AKA, I kind of would like to know what you said. B, way to ruin it, Apple.
Yeah, that's a really good, it doesn't tell you what it is. It just tells you there's a notification. Right?
Yeah. Well, it tells you, what is it? It tells you got a text message, and then it tells you what the animation was.
Yeah, but it doesn't tell you what was in the message.
Correct.
Yeah, that's, I just,
it's complete opposite of what I would want.
Right.
I don't know. The other funny part though is, if you, you know how like if you have a message and then you you have like your list of text messages, you know, and it'll list whatever the last text message was.
Yeah.
If you do the invisible ink one and then you go back to that screen, it totally tells you what the text message was. It's one of those where you're like, guys, this was like a huge feature. This was amazing. And you feel like you missed it on some of the details here.
You know what's funny? I really get the feeling that it wasn't. I get the feeling that it was like, hey, something's going on with messaging. We should improve it. And they kind of, it was like a, I don't want to call it the JV squad doing it because it's obviously not true, but it's, it doesn't feel like it was one of their like core technologies that they spent a lot of time working on it. And they were like, once, it's actually kind of fun. We should make a big deal about this. But I don't know. I agree with you. It doesn't feel complete. It feels like there are a few.
Well, it's just like the store's slow. I don't know. I'm not in love with it.
Yeah. But it's better than nothing. Anyways, it's, you know,
I guess.
You're moving further and further away from text messages and on every front, though. I think that's the interesting part to me. But
yeah. Just kind of got some messenger envy, I guess.
Yeah. But you know who sent a message to Elon Musk?
Ooh.
I
do know, but I won't spoil it.
All right. Blue Origin, a Jeff Bezos company, made an announcement.
Yeah.
They are building one big old rocket. So Jeff Bezos company, they landed a rocket before SpaceX did, and they were a little bit snotty about it, and I think it rubbed Elon Musk the wrong way, because the rocket that they landed was dramatically smaller than the Falcon 9 that SpaceX landed, and the big deal there being that SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket could actually make it into orbital to geosync orbit and still land, delivering a payload. Whereas the Blue Origin rocket, yes, it was able to land, but all it could do is go straight up into very low space and then fall back down. It wasn't into orbit.
Yeah.
It was an impressive feat, even close to what SpaceX was trying to do. It was not an apples apples comparison. And so when SpaceX did it a month later, it was like, come on, guys, that's just messed up. Well, Blue Origin seems to be correcting that, and they just announced the new Glenn 3-stage rocket and the Glenn 2-stage rocket and landed booster. And these things are enormous. They're real big boosters. If you click on the article on The Verge, they have a comparison chart of all the different rockets comparing.
I wish they would have had their new Shepard on the chart so I could see what they currently are shooting up.
Well, I think it's so small you wouldn't be able to see it.
No? Okay. I would still like to see that.
I agree because I don't know. I don't actually know how big it is. But yeah, so it's just interesting. It's interesting to see all these different rockets comparing it to like
Saturn
the Saturn V
is a large rocket.
Saturn V was a big old rocket, man. That thing was a beast.
Wow.
Yeah, I think could fling stuff into space. But yeah, so this is cool for this entire market. Obviously, like, this is going to change how space travel works. And we've been talking about it for a long time. SpaceX, it's a huge deal, but nobody else has been pursuing it other than Jeff Bezos' company. And Blue Origin's now, they're stepping up their game. They're getting ready to build an orbital rocket that can make it to geosync and further, and also land the booster.
Yeah, so a couple of interesting points with that. So New Shepard, so when Alan Shepard went up, he just went up and came back down. Which is what New Shepard did. The hope of New Glenn is to orbit the world, which is what John Glenn did. And he also announced that they're going to create a new Armstrong. And everyone's like, well, if we can follow the logic, we know where he's headed next. And which I think is cool. And but then I thought the other really interesting one is that Bezos he's self-funding this thing.
Yeah.
It's not public. They don't have to run cargo load. They don't have to do anything to make money. Unlike SpaceX, like they have to run errands essentially in order to earn money from NASA and other places to keep funding their rocket stuff.
Right.
And one of the benefits, if you have a founder who's worth $60 billion and is like the fifth richest person in the world. And yeah, so they're kind of like, yeah, we could take our time. Go slow. Go, what is it? Slow is smooth and smooth is fast or something like that. And so he had a quote. He said it in one of the articles. And but yeah, that's his whole thing. Is like, we created the New Shepard and we're essentially scaling everything up. And apparently landing a big rocket is actually easier than landing a small rocket because you get some counterbalance effects, which is nice. As opposed to a small one just kind of... It's more like a feather falling in the wind because it's so small. It's hard to control.
Mm. Makes sense.
The other one's more like a rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty fascinating. So it's pretty exciting, man. Space Race is back. Yeah,
it's awesome. It's private and all techie. It's cool.
I can't wait until we see the chart where the Saturn V looks small.
I don't think we will ever see that day, man.
I hope
so. The Saturn V is an expensive rocket to launch. The potential energy required to be stored in that thing in order to get it into space is ridiculous. And the whole goal is to make them smaller, not bigger, because smaller is more efficient. Like, they only make them bigger because they absolutely have to, if they can avoid it at all costs. The reason why, like, yeah, seriously, if you look at that display, like the Atlas V is workhorses of spaceflight, and it's not small because they couldn't figure out how to make it bigger. It's small because they spent an incredible amount of time, money, and engineering to make it small. The Saturn V is big because it's old and it's easy, and not knowledge of rocket science. Whereas now that they've got better rocket science, they can do great, you know. It's not about payload size. It's like they said, the bigger the rocket is, the easier it is to fly. That's why they put the Saturn. That's why the Saturn V is so big, or part of it at least. It's because it's easier. Small is hard, even though it's less expensive. You know, ideally, yeah.
Cool.
I agree. So I got one more, one last article, and this is just a optimism for the future. So there's been a bit of a cultural shift in Microsoft over the last couple of years, ever since my man took over the oh my gosh, what's his name?
You got this.
You're not supposed to tell me because that doesn't help burn the pathway. You're supposed to give me a hint. I'm going to look at his face. Is that going to help? It's not going to help.
I don't know.
I can't remember his name. What's his name? This is killing me.
Well, we'll start with his first name.
Satya Nadella. Thank you. There we go.
There we go.
Jeez, that was tough. Yeah, so Microsoft, earlier this year, they said Microsoft loves Linux, and that they were getting into the whole Linux thing, and they were building software for Linux, and they were porting Linux tools over to Windows and stuff like that. And everybody was like, is this just a marketing thing? Are you guys serious? Well, there is at least one piece of evidence that they are actually getting into the whole Linux, not just the Linux operating system, but the Linux mindset. As they are now the single largest contributor on GitHub, which for those of you who don't know is a place where you can put open source code. So they've got more open source code on GitHub than anybody else, including Google and all these other places. They had a large code repository on a different platform that I don't remember the name of and nobody cares about. But it was like something that they owned, so they were pushing it. And now they're like, look, it's important. It's more important that it's out there and that everybody can use it. And that's the purpose of this stuff. So like in so not just the fact that they're putting open source code on the GitHub, but the fact that they're putting it on GitHub alone is a big cultural shift. And I don't know, it's exciting. It's exciting for anybody who's into software and technology, because Microsoft's a big company, and I've been saying it for years. These guys are great engineers. They do good stuff and doesn't always see the light of day or get as much widespread use as it should. So now that they're putting it out there just as things that other people can leverage and contribute to, I think it's going to be great for Microsoft and great for the community at large. Obviously, Windows and Office are still not going to be open sourced, but a lot of the a lot of the technology around those or that operate them on them are, which just makes, as a platform for developers, it makes it even more intriguing. And I think it's gonna help bring people back to the Windows as an ecosystem for especially getting hardcore fans and getting the engineers. Thank you. Getting the engineers who used to be huge Microsoft fans who have over the years slipped off to Linux and OS X. I think they're going to be bringing them back with these sorts of moves, which is and not to mention the fact that so much of the Azure suite runs on Linux. So it makes sense that they'd they get into it, because it's what their platform runs on now. So
yeah, makes sense.
Yeah,
very cool.
I agree.
It's exciting. My, how times have changed. It's like a soap opera, you know. Where wait, they were a bad guy, now you're a good guy. Wait,
yeah,
I understand.
You know what? This is why we call it the corporate opera. It's exactly like that. Oh my gosh, dude, you guys fell in love once, and now you broke up, and you broke his heart. Now they're getting back together. Like,
You guys were enemies 2 years ago, and now you're married. What?
That's impossible. This isn't. It doesn't make any sense. This isn't believable. The show is too much. It's good stuff.
Turns out they just anthropomorphize. Dang it, I can't say it.
So close. Anthropomorphized.
Yeah. They just follow the real news, turn them into people.
Exactly. It's like.
Either that or Sacha's watching too many soaps. One of the two.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Cool. Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us, and thanks so much for listening to episode 260. We really do appreciate it. Three things before we take off. The first one, you can check out all the show notes at furtherbros.com/260. If you'd like to get those show notes sent directly to you, you can sign up on that same page on the right-hand side. And finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. If you would also like to contribute, we have 4 different levels. You can be a fanboy, a nerd, a junkie, and a maven, and they each have their own levels of rewards. It's pretty awesome. Again, furtherbros.com to check all of that out. Man, good show. Good stuff happening this week. Super exciting. On that note, I am James Furlow. My traveling brother is Matthew Furlow. Seriously, do travel safe coming home. And we will talk next time.